And welcome to the Around the Nation podcast, wrapping up week three of the 2008 Division III football season. I'm Pat Coleman.
And I'm Keith McMillan.
And it was an interesting week three, to say the least, Keith. I know from my spot up here in the upper Midwest, there were three big upsets in my area and a six overtime game. So pretty much whatever game I would have chosen to go to on Saturday, I would have ended up in pretty good shape. And there were, of course, a lot of other great games around the nation as well.
Sure. I mean, out east, you had Ithaca and Hartwick getting together for a 69-42 game. Wesley putting together a second half that made them look like the team we thought they'd be at the beginning of the season. And obviously Mount Union looking impressive as well.
The already, I know it's just 3 weeks through the season. Some teams have only played two games. Some teams have only played one even. But, it's looking like the playoff picture this year is going to be pretty interesting. Bethel starts off 1-2 back-to-back losses and looking like they may have eliminated themselves possibly from Pool C, although they could still run the table and win the conference, or run the table and get a Pool C. At two losses, that we've had teams get into two losses over the past couple of years, but not very often. And then Ohio Northern, of course, starts off 0-2, and they're not looking in great shape for an at-large bid either.
Well, for Ohio Northern, they just, with the way they schedule, they put the pressure on themselves to now really have to run the table if they're going to make it as an at-large team. And that's, of course, assuming that Mountain Union doesn't lose some game here in the conference schedule, and usually that's a pretty safe assumption. But, in any conference, as long as the automatic qualifier is up for grabs, the teams have an avenue for the playoffs. But realistically, the way we like to look at it, of course, is when you get to that second loss, like Bethel has right now and like Ohio Northern has, they really put the pressure on themselves this early in the season to have to pretty much be perfect the rest of the way.
Let's talk about St. John's for a little bit. They moved the ball well in their game against Concordia Moorhead, although they lost 9-6. Gave up a pair of points on a safety late in the game. They did get over 300 yards of total offense. They held Concordia Moorhead under 200, but they lose the game and finish. They're 2-1 now, 0-1 in the conference, and they're chasing the rest of the league the rest of the way.
Well, the interesting thing about that, too, is not just that St. John's and Bethel are the two teams that are usually the front runners, and now they're both chasing, both with picking up a conference loss this weekend. But those teams, they don't look like they're so devoid of talent that they're out of the race. I think one loss in the MIAC might be enough to win it this year, because you have Concordia Moorhead, who's off to a good start. You have St. Olaf, who's not the offensive, doesn't have the offensive firepower as they did in previous seasons, but they are off to a 3-0 start. And then you have several other teams now that are looking like they're going to be a factor. Augsburg, you have to respect Carleton now that they beat Bethel for the second year in a row. So I think St. John's, is sort of in the group of teams there in the MIAC rather than out in front. And same thing for Bethel. And I think that from an outsider's perspective, it's going to be fun to watch. If you're a team in the league, in the conference, it'll be a little agonizing.
Moorhead, of course, already has the St. John's game under its belt. They host Bethel this weekend, so it doesn't get any easier for Bethel. And they host St. Thomas and go to Augsburg. They also have St. Olaf and Carleton left at home and Gustavus on the road. So that's how the rest of the Concordia Moorhead schedule breaks out. It's just interesting looking at a kind of a conference turned upside down right now, as they've got St. Olaf, Carleton, Gustavus Adolphus, and Concordia Moorhead tied at 1-0. Augsburg yet to play a conference game. Then St. John's, Hamlin, St. Thomas, and Bethel kind of tied for sixth place or tied for last, depending on how you want to look at it. Down south of the border, the Iowa Conference might not have an at-large team this year, as Wartburg beat Central on Saturday. And Central's got the one loss now. Wartburg had a loss out of conference, which make it a tougher road for them. Coe, which could have been considered a contender for an at-large bid, perhaps, is 1-2. Dubuque is 1-2. That's another league that might not see an at-large team. There's nobody left undefeated there.
But even if they don't see an at-large team, it looks like the race for the conference championship and the automatic bid is going to be a pretty tight race to watch, which in a lot of seasons it is. Even the years when Central's ended up on top or run through the conference undefeated, they've done it in such a manner where you never feel like the race is over, that this team's going to run away with it. And I think this year, a little bit with Central having less experience, not having that longtime quarterback in Tim Connell, and not having Vance Schuring back there in the backfield. Now you have a team that has a little bit less experience on offense, a little bit less firepower on offense, and other teams, the way they used to win those games in crunch time. Now, we saw on Saturday, Wartburg pull that game out.
And, of course, the conference schedule getting a little bit of a different look this year with the Wartburg and Central, a game that has, you know, decided the conference or had a big part in the conference race many times over the past couple of seasons, being played in early September, in mid-September. And here's what Wartburg coach Rick Willis had to say about that after the game.
It's a little bit odd, yeah, but there's a lot of football to be played, so it's a little different, but it's still a big game, as you can see.
So Wartburg, Keith, which struggled with the spread offense that Augsburg was able to throw at them in week two, had a lot more success against Central. Central did not complete a pass in the first quarter. Zach Bandow, the young quarterback, finished just 16 of 39 with an interception, 199 yards and a touchdown. Had, you know, some flashes of brilliance in the receiving game, and, you know, just didn't quite get it all put together. Wartburg, on the other hand, you know, they had Alex Boom, the running back, healthy the entire game this time, 28 carries for 87 yards. Didn't get in the end zone, but Nick Yordy completed a long 77-yard touchdown pass to Jason Roskam. And, you know, Wartburg on defense looked pretty good. As we mentioned, you know, anytime you can hold an opposing team under 40% passing or 40% or under, you have to be pretty happy about your defense.
Yeah, and, you know, when you talk about Wartburg's development so far early in the season, being a little up and down against Augsburg and then coming back to beat Central, you know, they had an interesting offseason. Remember, they lost Coach Eric Kaler right before camp started, and they went back to their former coach in Rick Willis.
Back in the middle of July, I never would imagine I'd been in this situation, that's for sure. But and then, you know, we've had a really wild couple of weeks with the overtime game last week and this week. And I'll tell you, I told our guys after last week that they kept battling and played hard, and we were proud of them for that. We made some mistakes, obviously, but we really felt like we played hard, and they just kept fighting today.
And I know when you have I guess it's not upheaval because Coach Willis had been in the program before, but it's certainly an unexpected change right before the season started. You know, you're in that situation where, you know, things are changing and everything's sort of fluid as the season is begun. So, you know, to see them sort of find their footing here on Saturday was pretty impressive.
Those are some of the teams that didn't look all that good in week three. Let's talk about some of the teams that are looking good right now. And I think you and I both agree that one of those teams has to be Redlands.
Yeah, well, I got a chance to listen to a little bit of that game last night against Whitworth. And, you know, I thought it would be a pretty tight game, and I don't want to say over in a hurry, but certainly Redlands opened up a big lead. I believe, you know, when I turned it on, it was 28-7, and it got a little worse from there. You know, Whitworth did have their quarterback, Corey Kemp, who we wrote about in kickoff. He got hurt in that game. But on the flip side, Redlands, with their quarterback, Dan Selway, they're looking like a pretty dangerous team, outscoring their opponents in the first two games, 86-14.
Selway's completed 73 of his passes so far, 73% of his passes, of course, 5 touchdowns against 2 interceptions, averaging almost 245 yards through 2 games. And their defense is looking pretty good right now. They've got 6 takeaways through the first 2 games.
Yeah, and anytime you can get turnovers, you know, you put your offense in a great situation. So Redlands right now pretty much clicking.
Redlands picks up a couple of key regional wins, and heading into their conference schedule, you know, I think still the other teams you got to look at in that conference remain Occidental. They're 2-0. Cal Lutheran 1-1 in their non-conference slate with a loss to Pacific Lutheran. But, you know, between those two teams, maybe Whittier, I think that's where the conference is going to be decided.
You know, same deal as with some of these other conferences out west. You have a team that's maybe a little bit of a leader, but 3 or 4 teams we're going to be watching closely. You know, when these conference games, when the real interesting games start happening, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch. And I think Redlands right now has established itself in the SCIAC as the leader, but we really don't know what we're going to get necessarily from Occidental, from Cal Lutheran, and from some of those other teams.
One of the other teams that's looking good through 3 weeks is somebody you saw on Saturday, Keith, in the Christopher Newport Salisbury game.
Yeah, and you know, in a sense, of course, it was sort of unfair because it was Salisbury's third game, and Christopher Newport, because they had that game back in week one canceled against Wesley because of the remnants of Hurricane Hannah. And Christopher Newport had, I think, something like 39 days of practice, maybe since camp had ended, Coach Kelcher had said. So, you know, they certainly weren't as sharp, but Salisbury, you know, first half, it was 10-7 at halftime, And, you know, Salisbury wasn't too pleased with its play, but in the third quarter, they were able to get that option clicking and explode. And, you know, when you just look at the size of some of the players on Salisbury, they're not a really big, strong team outside of, Jarrell Chandler, who's a real beast at defensive end. But, you look at them, they're fast. And when they run their option, I mean, it's going to be tough to stop. When Ronnie Curley is making those reads and when they are clicking, they are really going to be tough to stop. And you know, they position themselves to play so many tough teams, partially because they only have three conference games that they're going to be pretty much in a national discussion every week this year.
So Curley's back for them, obviously, but there weren't a whole lot of other returning running backs from last year. How'd the rest of the running back core look?
They look pretty good at fullback. They have a guy named Shelby Fisher who rushed for 109 yards yesterday, and he's a, as you would expect a fullback in an option offense to be, just a bull. You know, he gets in there, and sometimes the carries are only going to go for 2 or 3 yards, but sometimes he's going to bull through there for 10 or 15, and that can be a lot of trouble in an option offense. And then, you know, they run the option out of wingbacks instead of, you know, wishbone or eye or split backs or anything like that. So, you know, they are able to basically rotate guys in that, that get the ball, you know, in the option. Their pitch man is coming from the wing spot. So they're slot backs, but they're also guys that can go out for passes too. And they, you know, when a team plays Salisbury, they have that sort of a different look on offense. You know, a lot of teams aren't running the option anymore. And then they're also running a 3-3-5 on defense. So the week leading up to playing Salisbury for an opposing team is going to be real difficult because they got to get their mind around two completely different schemes.
Salisbury goes to Delaware Valley next week. Then they play at Newport News and at St. John Fisher. Two real interesting games coming up for them. They also, of course, host Wesley on November 1st, the U.S. 13 rivalry, and then their in-state rivals, Frostburg State, to close out the season. I think one more team that's looking good through the first 3 weeks has to be Willamette.
Yeah, and that's another team where you just have a little bit different look on offense. They run what they call a fly offense, and you know, go back a few years, 2004, Willamette was a playoff team and they slid, I think, all the way to 2 wins, maybe. I know they had a 4-6 season in there and I should have it in front of me, but in any case, to start off 3-0 going into that schedule in the Northwest Conference, the first season where they have an automatic qualifier now out there, certainly looks pretty good for them where they're standing.
Indeed, Willamette just 2-7 2 years ago, 4-6 and 3-3 in the conference, including knocking off Linfield last year. Now go into, not into the conference slate yet. They got one more out of conference game. But yeah, currently 3-0, big win against Concordia Moorhead, win against Cal Lutheran that'll look good in the, region records. At Whitworth on October 4th, at Linfield on October 25th. They're at Pacific Lutheran in between, and at home they have Menlo Puget Sound to close the season. I mean, this, you know, again, this is the first season in which the Northwest Conference has the automatic bid, so Willamette doesn't have to worry about necessarily running the table in their out-of-conference schedule, although they're 3/4 of the way there.
And, you know, not only once they get through that out-of-conference schedule, but you look at kind of the starts that their main competition is off to. Whitworth humbled on Saturday by Redlands, and Linfield, of course, lost their opener to Hardin-Simmons. So now you got two other teams who aren't really coming in riding high either. And certainly Willamette's helped by Concordia Moorhead's win against St. John's, going back to week 1, of course, that win over the Cobbers you mentioned.
Now let's talk about some teams that have some interesting things coming up. I think St. John Fisher, for example, we could consider them in good shape mathematically anyway. Their losses to Mount Union, seem to traditionally be kind of discarded in the playoff selection process. Plus, it's a non-regional game anyway. But I think you'd have to be worried about them. They only average 3.5 yards a carry against Rochester on Saturday night. They don't have anything easier coming up.
Yeah, well, they're in a situation where, like you said, you take away that first Mount Union game because Mount Union went ahead and demolished Ohio Northern, and looks like they're more of the same for Mount Union. You know, they're just almost head and shoulders above almost everybody, even top 25 teams. And then, you know, St. John Fisher, not so impressive against Buffalo State or at Rochester, 20-7 and 24-17, those wins. But we'll get a taste of what the Cardinals have to offer the next 3 weeks. Three home games, and it's Ithaca and Hartwick, the two big Empire 8 rivals, and then Salisbury on October 11th. So you got the next 3 weeks. We're going to find out what St. John Fisher's made of.
Indeed. And you know, that'll also go a long way, obviously, towards deciding the Empire 8 race, which got its first big blow over the weekend as Ithaca really took it to Hartwick. You have to think Ithaca smarting over the way they lost at Hartwick last year.
Yeah, well, that's sort of the game that put Hartwick in the discussion, not just in the conference race, but then we started having to pay attention to them again nationally. And Ithaca wanted to make sure. They made a statement, obviously, on Saturday. And you know, I thought the interesting thing was that scored 69 points, but didn't have to do it all through the air.
Indeed. It was a big ground game. In fact, Dan Juvan only had to throw the ball 17 times to get those 69 points as Ithaca improved to 3-0 and, you know, more than doubled its season output of scoring with those 69 points after scoring 55 in the first two games. Really kind of night and day. If you look at week one against Lycoming, in which, you know, a lot of questions about Ithaca on offense, only winning that game 17-16 and then seemingly answering almost every question on offense on Saturday.
Yeah, being able not to throw the ball and run the ball and mix it up, control the tempo of the game. You come away with questions now, giving up 42 points to Hartwick, 460 yards through the air to Jason Boltus. You know, is that basically, that's what Hartwick does. They're able to move the ball through the air. So can you throw that game away and say Hartwick is just so talented offensively with Boltus and Jack Phelan that, you know, that's not a concern from here going down the road? Or does Ithaca go back and say, wow, we gave up 42 points. We gave up, you know, 460 yards through the air. We really need to get our pass defense straightened out.
Yeah, I guess we'll find out this week as they play St. John Fisher. That was a high-scoring game. I think a relatively low-scoring game, considering the fact that it went six overtimes. Was St. Olaf defeating St. Thomas 29-23. That was one of those games I drove past on I-35 on my way down to Iowa, and it turns out would have done pretty well there. At St. Thomas, two big plays early on, a Brady Irvin 50-yard interception return for a touchdown, and then a David Sauer 65-yard touchdown pass to Fritz Waldvogel in the first 13 minutes. St. Thomas had 14 points on the board, and then they didn't score again until the third overtime.
And you know, like you said, Pat, it's just so strange to see an overtime game with six overtimes. That's now the longest game in Division III history going by overtimes. And to see it only be 29-23, you know, you expect that game to be 69-63 or something like that. Clearly, both of these teams have something this year on defense, and I think that's part of it. And also, like you said, must have just been a great game to be at and watch. You know, when teams are making stops on each other in overtime or holding each other to field goals in overtime rather than just touchdown, 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 touchdown.
And in fact, it seems it wasn't until the defenses started tiring in the 9th and 10th periods of the game in which they started putting some points on the board in overtime. Three of the first four overtimes were scoreless, and the fourth one had a field goal on each side, and St. Thomas and St. Olaf traded touchdowns in the fifth overtime, and St. Olaf had the touchdown in the sixth overtime to finish it off and finish with the 29-23 win. St. Olaf 3-0 now, 1-0, one of those teams that, you know, at least early on in the driver's seat in the MIAC, plus they play Augsburg. Augsburg is a team that's looked good through the first couple of weeks as well.
As far as St. Olaf is concerned, I think one thing that's interesting about them is the way they sort of recast themselves, not as a high-scoring offensive team now, but as a team that can play this ball control type of game, you know, and also be good on defense. Had the ball for 34 minutes yesterday and rushed for 209 yards, only passed for 185. And those are, you know, with all six overtimes included, so those aren't really balloon stats, you know. 27 first downs to St. Thomas's 12, and also held St. Thomas to 7 of 21 on third down. So now when we watch St. Olaf in this MIAC race, are they going to be a team rather than having these 51-49 games or 51-50? I'm trying to remember back to last year where they had one of those real high scoring games. You know, are they going to be a team that does have to win some 20-17 or 17-14 games? And it seems like in the first 3 weeks, that's how they've recast themselves, and they are now still somebody to watch.
I bet you're thinking of that 85-28 game against crosstown rival Carleton, which still sticks in some people's craws, I think, on the other side of Northfield. Now, Division III is having a pretty good season so far against the NAIA and had another big blow in Division III's favor on Saturday.
Yeah, well, Oshkosh with a got a second chance on a legal motion, legal formation, one of those penalties, and Oshkosh.
It gets even better, Keith. Ohio Dominican is penalized at home because one of their players celebrated and came out on the field too early after the blocked field goal, giving Oshkosh a second chance to kick for the win on the road.
And that's obviously a tough way to lose, but when Ohio Dominican, you know, a team that is ranked second in NAIA and has national championship aspirations, going against a team, you know, from Division III's strongest conference, but not one of the strongest teams in that conference, you know, that's probably a game they either expect to win or hope to win, and certainly didn't plan on losing it in the fashion which they did. It's a tough loss for them. I think it's a little bit of a boost for Division III and for Oshkosh now, maybe a team that we have to watch a little bit in the WIAC.
Some interesting games going on as the North Coast and the University Athletic Association continue their kind of crossover games. WashU has a chance to really make a statement this year. They play Wittenberg, they play Wabash, and they play Ohio Wesley, and the two top teams in the conference and another team from the upper division. And WashU, which has to fight for a Pool B bid, doesn't have an automatic bid to shoot for, jumps out and is 3-0 now.
Yeah, struck a big win for themselves on Saturday, 30-27 against Wittenberg. And Pat, like you said, that's a game where when you're a team like the Wesleys and Salisburys of the ACFC, or like Case Western Reserve, like WashU in the UAA, you only have your three conference games, and you have to schedule tough teams. You have to schedule games that impress. So if you get in a situation where you need to jump over somebody for a Pool B bid, you have those impressive wins. And assuming Wittenberg goes on to be a contender in the North Coast, now WashU has that sort of signature win.
WashU also has Wabash coming up later in the season. They have them at home. The Bears 3-0 for the first time since 2001. Buck Smith with the big day on offense, 22-31 passing for 265 yards and two touchdowns. And just to touch back on Wesley with the pretty disastrous week two against Delaware Valley, they bounced back pretty nicely in week three.
Yeah, you know, that's a game that was with Widener that was tight at halftime, and Wesley ended up winning that game going away 41-9. Stuck with Shane McSweeney at quarterback the whole time this week. He was 18 of 23 for 285 yards, three touchdowns, and Jason Schatz, who started the season as the starter, 1 of 1 for 10 yards. So it seems like McSweeney's certainly the guy right now. 18 of 23. I mean, when you can be that efficient and when you have the kind of playmakers Wesley has, you know, not just at wide receiver, but also a great tight end up there, you know, they're going to be tough to beat.
Coming up this week, games of note, Salisbury goes to Delaware Valley. We also, we already mentioned, of course, Ithaca is at St. John Fisher.
I think those are your two big games this week, Pat. When you look at the schedule, there's a lot of other interesting games, but really I think Salisbury and Del Valle and Ithaca at St. John Fisher are the two marquee games. In the NESCAC, you have Trinity, Connecticut playing Williams. You know, that's possibly a game where two championship contenders are playing. Some other interesting ones between, you know, teams that are maybe going to be contenders in their conference. Mississippi College goes to Hardin-Simmons in the ASC. Otterbein gets together with Ohio Northern, which now, you know, as we mentioned, the Polar Bears need to basically run the table from here. Also Heidelberg at John Carroll, two teams coming off losses this week and need to sort of try to keep pace in the OAC. You have Gustavus going to St. John's, St. Olaf going to Augsburg, and Bethel at Concordia-Moorhead. You know, at this point, every game in the MIAC is interesting. And then a game that probably wasn't necessarily one on the map at the beginning of the season, but now could be, is WPI at RPI.
Let's talk about the Mississippi College Hardin-Simmons game for a second, because, you know, Mississippi College with the big blow last week, losing Adam Schaefer, their starting quarterback, to injury for basically the second time in three seasons. Mississippi College won this weekend against McMurray handily 44-7, but probably face a different test on the other side of Abilene.
Well, absolutely. Hardin-Simmons, clearly one of the most talented teams in the ASC, and has had the problems. We've, you know, discussed them over and over again, sort of getting it together defensively, and really would have been a tough test for that defense to play against Adam Schaefer. And now it's more of a test for Mississippi College to see if they can sort of recast that offense, try to find an identity, I guess, against Hardin-Simmons. You know, they're a team that put themselves in a hole with a couple of early non-conference losses. And, you know, pretty much their only path to the playoffs now is to beat Harden-Simmons and to run through the ASC.
Yep, they'd have to beat Harden-Simmons, and then they'd have to beat Mary Harden-Baylor on the road on October 18th. Presumably, you'd have to win both of those games to win the conference title. That wraps up our Around the Nation podcast for Week 3. Don't forget to check out more from D3Football.com throughout the week. And also, Keith's Around the Nation column coming up on Wednesday.
Leave us some comments. Let us know you're out there listening.